What is going on, awesome people of the internet, and welcome to another episode of the podcast. In this episode, I sit down with Adrian Slattery, who is the co-founder of DC Motor Company. Both Adrian and I care intimately about the importance of building strong relationships with our clients and how playing the long game really leads to building big businesses. You see, this podcast has always been a medium where I get to talk about all of the different areas of building sustainable businesses, and so it's an absolute no-brainer, and it's an absolute honor as well to have Adrian on the show. Adrian has built a strong business over 11 years. That is a huge amount of time, and it's an honor to have him on the show and to talk about all of the wealth of experience and knowledge and nuggets of wisdom that he has and that he's gone through. I think every entrepreneur, be it you've been at this game for a long period of time or a very short period of time, or maybe you're even just considering thinking about building a business, there is a wealth of knowledge in this episode. There is so much that you could gain from it, and just hearing Adrian's story and how he has built a really amazing company. So let's jump into the show. I am here with the awesome, the amazing, the beautiful Adrian Slattery. So what I do at the very start of every podcast is always to let the guests introduce themselves, because I know I'm going to get it wrong. Go for it.
All right. I am Adrian Slattery from a place called Rathfarnham in Dublin. And I set up a business with a guy called Paul 11 years ago, and it's called DC Motor Co. /DC Global.
Love it. Mm-hmm. So before we get into DC and all of the wonderful tales and nuggets of wisdom in there, Let's start at the very beginning. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Marley Grange in Rathfarnham.
Very close to where my wife grew up.
Is it?
Yeah, she grew up in Rathfarnham Wood.
Oh yeah, bigger houses. Yeah, no, they used to rattle their jewellery at us. So I grew up there, went to Divine Word Marley Grange, which is the little primary school in the estate, and went on to secondary school in Benillas in Kilmacud. But I was never really into school.
At all? Like, you had terrible grades, didn't want to be there, or bad, any aspects you liked?
Yeah, I think bad grades followed by a misunderstanding of what I actually wanted. Well, I didn't know what I want back then. I mean, my mom used to worry about me because she didn't know what I wanted to do. There was one story. This is after school, and a few of my mates went to college. And yeah. I was out of work for maybe 6-8 months. My mom says, right, you're going to get a job. I was like, oh, Christ.
It's going to happen, Adrian.
Yeah, yeah. So she brings me up to Sandyford Industrial Estate, which is where the place is now. And I literally had to knock on doors asking for a job.
That's amazing, though.
I don't think I got one, though, did I? No, I think I did in Spring Grove. But that's how...
You'd have like a folder full of CVs and going place to place.
Yeah, yeah. Class. Would you know that the photograph on your CV to make yourself look older even though you look younger?
And sticking on your dad's suit.
Yeah, putting on tea leaves around your lip.
I'll never forget that. My dad lent me his suit, and it was when I was trying to go for a job in Dell when they were in Bray, like years ago. Yeah. And I remember walking in and just having this feeling of... Do I look as ridiculous as I feel right now? Because like even the arms of the suit were like past my own hands, you know?
It's
like
you could put your fist in the collar.
Exactly, yeah. It looked like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids or something, you know?
It's when you pretend to be older than you are, it just never works. It's just hilarious. But I did that because I got into that mode of I didn't know what to do, so I became lazy. And like I probably would I think most people would be lazy when they don't know what they want to do, when they haven't found what they want to do.
Yeah.
That was my start of my work.
I wonder often about that, though. So did you go to college?
No, I did a sales and marketing course in Falls, which is like a...
Before your first job or after your first job?
It was after. disaster. So I went back to do it because someone told me to do it. It's you should be in sales. You should be in sales. You should be in sales.
Yeah.
And when someone says you should be, you kind of tend to go the other way. But I don't really want to be. So I got it. I took a job, actually, funny, in van sales. Right. I don't know what it was. I think it was selling like razors or something. But the van. So I was being dropped off there the morning I was taking a job. And I said, what in the name of Jesus? I can't park that thing. This van was like huge. I said, I can't park that outside the house.
Yeah.
So I just pulled that out and said, yeah, it's just not working out. And I legged it just because of the van. Anyway.
But I wonder about that, though. Like, for me, the best way for me to unlock or to discover what I was passionate about or what I actually really cared about or what I wanted a job in was to do all the jobs that I didn't want to do. Yeah. And it took a long time for me to do that. My dad and my parents were always almost identical to that. They would, you're not sitting on the couch. Like, it's just not going to be a possibility. Yeah. So either go out and get a job, but you have to get a job. And so for the first job that I ever did was, I would literally be at Dunstores and Corners Court at 4 o'clock in the morning and pack the freezers full of bacon and whatever was there. And I remember going like, I don't like this.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's cool to get paid and it's cool to do this. And it kind of gave me a chance to go home in the evenings wreck tired and go, if I want to get out of this but still retain the money thing, how does that happen?
Because I was never a deep thinker like that. That really came later on.
Right.
It was weird. So, I mean, so a lot of my mates that went to college, they'd go away every summer but I'd be working because I got a job then after that. But I had never thought about it until, will I go straight into this?
Yeah, do. Yeah, absolutely.
So I worked in a couple of telecoms places and all that. And one of them I met my wife.
What did you do there?
I sold phone cards and stuff like that.
And like for PBXs?
No, they're actually cards. Like to ring Brazil, it's cheaper than ringing from your house phone. Calling cards, yeah.
No way.
I used to have a little moped going around Parnell Street, collecting money and selling.
I love it. Hustling.
50cc. Ah, yeah, that's just the way it was. And so I did that, met my wife in the second one of those companies. But when I was working, my mates away in college, or like at the summer going to America and all that, it's like, this is so annoying. I don't really like my job and they're still having more fun or whatever. So then in 99, I think I went to Canada. Mm. I said, I'm going to leave work. Went to Canada and got kind of the same job back when I came back after 3 months, which was an amazing time. But so I did that for like 4, 6.5 years. And then I worked for the big telecoms company in Ireland, which is now sounds like Fair. But
not to give too much away.
I don't want to plug anything. So I did that for about 1.5 years. And the pivotal point up to that, so I would have been 26 or 7 or something like that. We were standing outside. It's Cumberland Street. You know Cumberland Street?
I do.
In the middle of the city. Standing there. So I was doing a thing in this company called Winback. So they would have lost their customers for their phone lines and their all the internet and stuff. So I had to go and win them back.
Okay.
Which basically meant we're going to abuse you through your sales pitch because we lost loads of money on shares. That's the way it was. Jeez. So you're like, actually, okay, I'm just going to, but before I leave, will you sign this? So I was standing there one day. I remember it well. And there was 9 of us in our team alone.
Okay.
And I said to myself, I do not want to do this anymore. I don't want to be like him. I don't want to be like her. I don't care about my company advances, Toyota car or my petrol card and all that. I just can't do this anymore. And that was the moment.
I love those.
That I said, I just can't. Because I always feel I still am a little bit different in the sense I don't want to be like everyone else. But not in an obnoxious way where I have to wear a pink suit down Grafton Street to stand out. It's just, I don't want to do what everyone else is doing. And that for me was just the absolute... Right, I need to change this.
And once the epiphany came, or once the kind of the drawing of the conclusion of going, this isn't me, this isn't the job I want to do, what steps did you take to kind of say, okay, what is the world that I do want to live in, or what do I want to do?
I didn't really know. So it's kind of funny now because it's all playing out a little bit now. But I was never that good at that win-back thing because it was basically You go and get the sale and you move on, get another sale. It was business development. So I was never good at that because it was all about your numbers.
There was no relationship.
It was never about the customer.
You're right.
So I'd end up talking to a customer about, I don't know, some tragedy they're going through or what, you know, what they did at the weekend. And so I wasn't, I didn't want to then go sign this, I'll never see you again.
Yeah.
So, which is funny because now my business is all about that.
Yeah.
It's just weird. But so when that happened a few weeks into it or whatever, I had just said, I'm gonna move. I'm going to do something. So I was always interested in cars. I wanted to do something for myself. And right at that time, Paul, who's now my business partner, he was leaving O2 or O3. Sorry, I'll just take that plug out of the wall. Sorry about that. A telecoms company. And so we said, why don't we set up something? But we didn't know, was it going to be cars? Was it going to be telecoms? So we called it Vizetel.
Right. That's yeah. quite a name.
Yeah, I don't know where we came up with that. I lost the bet anyway. So we called it that. So he was kind of working on telecoms, or it's working on cars. So as we went through, we kind of turned more into cars. But that's when the passion for cars came.
Do you think that there was an element of unlocking that once yourself and Paul kind of met each other, that you were saying, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. And then he's saying, yeah, me too.
Yeah, it was timing. Everything is timing because we were mates before that. But how can two people suddenly be at this point at that actual time that you can then go on and do something else? It's completely timing and
yeah.
synchronicity and all that kind of stuff. So, but yeah, that was 11 years ago now.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're kind of, I'm just trying to draw a mental picture in my head, and you're stepping off from your job and you're going, I'm not winning back any more of mm-hmm. you mofos.
Yeah, yeah.
And you meet each other and you start to go on this journey together.
But I had to tell my girlfriend, who's now my wife, that because we had bought a house and stuff.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. So
dear.
I said, hey, love, listen, I think we're really good together.
Okay.
However, that word for me is everything. However, I just think you're amazing. However, and I said, look, I'm leaving my job, company car, petrol card, commission, salary, and I'm going on my own with nothing.
What
actually, I had $5,000 from an SSIA government scheme, and that was it. And she supported me. She still does. It's still kind of a monthly sales pitch. I have to tell her that we're going to be all right. But she was pivotal, yeah. Pivotal.
Isn't it amazing, though? Like, it's... I often compare myself and my wife, or I use the analogy that I'm like this balloon that's full of helium, and I tend to kind of drift off into the thing of all the possibilities and things that I think that I'm capable of doing. But she's more holding on to the string at the end of the balloon, going, you know,
she's
sail
grounded
a little bit, but don't go too far.
She's grounded.
Yeah.
Because if you and I didn't have that backbone,
yeah,
we wouldn't be sitting here.
Definitely.
You definitely need a little, the yin and yang or whatever it is. Or the
yeah.
Bill and Ted.
And so once you've had that conversation with your then girlfriend?
Then girlfriend, yeah. Yeah, maybe she was my fiance. Oh, God, I can't smash for this now. We were together.
She's going to have the calendar out.
Before the ring. It was before the ring.
How did you decide that you're going to set up the business together?
I mean, look, So all the way through my life up to that, there wasn't massive confidence. There wasn't massive abilities that I knew. So it was really... It was just a faith thing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not... I am now more spiritual, and we can go through that again, but it was definitely someone guiding me, and I didn't know what, because I didn't have any plan. We knew what we'd like to do.
Right.
But we didn't have any plan of how we were going to do it.
Mm.
Set up in Paul's house, up the top kind of room, two desks, and I said, that phone one day is going to ring. And it was just like that. It was beautiful innocence, though, because we didn't... Because we didn't know anything, we didn't really care then. So, and like 11 years on, you're thinking, I'm probably slightly more bitter than I would have. Like, you know, it's a mad thing. It's like a child where, you know, they're in the moment constantly. So if something happens, they're back in it. Something happens, back in it. And that's the way it was.
Yeah. Because
you didn't really know where you were going.
I love that.
It was exciting.
You remember in The Matrix when your man rats out something you didn't watch?
I went to the cinema to watch Matrix 2, which was ridiculous because they didn't have a clue what was going on.
But he's ratted out the guys about the world that they've figured out or whatever, and he's eating a steak and he goes, you know, how could you rat us out or how could you tell us in? He's like, blissful ignorance.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's so true, that when you're starting a business, there's a lot of excitement around it. Like, you're pumped up and you're ready to go. And
you're going to take on the world.
You're going to take on the world, exactly.
That's the way it is. And I think trying to refresh that all the time is important, because you do tend to go in the hardship and the little bit of bitterness and all that. But if you have that freshness, because that's what it is. It's ignorant to any... It's no fear.
Yeah.
That's the big thing. It's no fear.
Have you noticed this? Because it's something that's definitely happened with me, is that as the company matures, or maybe it's me that's maturing, I'm still happy to take on risk, but I'm faster and quicker at weighing up the different risk factors. And so I don't take the same magnitude of risk anymore. And I'm never sure if that's actually holding me back or if that's a good thing for the business. You know, am I playing it too safe?
No. Well, look, I think you just get, you know more. So I would kind of use it in the same analogy as if you get bad news in your business.
Yeah.
Like, years ago, it would take a long time to get over it. Now it's a case of, right, I'm going to take the pain, and then an hour or two later, it's happened, let's move on. I think that's the kind of same thing where you just get cuter, clever. But that's true experience. You cannot and will not read that, see it on YouTube. You just have to go through it.
Yeah.
You need the scars.
Okay, so the two of you are upstairs looking at a phone. Not upstairs in that
capacity. As I'm looking at the name of the microphone.
So you're upstairs and you're sitting at your desk looking at a phone, waiting for it to ring. How did you find your first customers? How did you even get the capital to get the first car?
The first year is very funny. So that was the end of 06. So I think by the end of 07, we had sold a motorbike.
Okay.
So we were made.
2 years?
We were made. No, I think, or maybe it was the middle of, what, for a good few months.
And 07 was a tough year.
Yeah. No, we literally set up a company.
Okay.
And swept the party away because everything had just died. But sure, let's set up a car company. That's a great idea. But we, for the first, 6 months, we had only sold a motorbike. We had gone to about 10 garages and said, we're setting up a sourcing company, because we were a sourcing company. We were going to get the car for the customer, give it to the customer cheaper than everyone else. We've no big overheads. That was our pitch. And we were called Dream Cars. So we were sitting down, we go, what are we going to call ourselves? So me and Paul said, I think we should call ourselves Dream Cars. It's like, what? Yeah, but it's noticeable. That was what it's all about. I mean... But then we had to kind of dull that name down over the coming years because of the recession and stuff, and people, it's too flash, blah, blah, blah. But it got us noticed. That was the thing.
Yeah. And I think there's another element to that, and it's something that I've only learned myself recently, is in branding and in marketing, you need to be able to tell what your company does to a five-year-old, and for that five-year-old to tell another five-year-old, and for them to understand what it is. Yeah. And when you say Dream Cars, like, it's literally Ron Seal. Like, it's exactly what it says in the tin, and it makes a ton of sense. Like, people can't lose that in translation.
They can lose it, but I would like to have come up with that myself, because that would have sounded intelligent. But it wasn't that. It was just, I want to flash it straight there, and that's what happened. But we went to about 10 garages, and most of them basically said, yeah, right, yous won't be around in a couple of years. Blah, blah, blah. You know, because at that stage it was...
Sometimes I love Ireland.
It was, yeah, no, yeah. It's so, I mean, it's no bitterness whatsoever. We love seeing people doing well. Yeah, well. But when, I think even one garage I went into, your man didn't even look up to see who I was, you know. Because, again, things were starting to go wrong, but they still had that kind of Celtic Tiger arrogance about them.
Yeah.
You know, so their opinion of us was, here's two lads, like everyone else, and they'd be gone next year or whatever. But anyway, there was one particular garage that we got on well with, and which was Des Cullen Cars, which were a big supercar dealer at the time. They were the first to bring in supercars. And that transpired into 6 months later, we moved in with them, which was probably the start of 08. again, it was kind of coattail stuff.
Yeah.
Hanging on to the coattails.
Because I remember Lee and I, we lived across the road in the Beacon, in the Cubes.
Mm-hmm.
And we met Robert and Sarah over in the Beacon Hotel. And then...
#Orb.
Yeah. And I remember he brought me downstairs. I keep on coming up with these innuendos. But he brought me downstairs and...
Big house.
He showed me all of the cars that Des Cullen had downstairs, because that's what he used to store them, I think, or something like that. And I was just shocked.
Mm.
Because to set the tone for anybody that's not from Ireland or unaware of what happened here in 2007 and 2008, it was when the biggest financial recession happened in Ireland. And everything over a couple of months just went pop, and lots of businesses started to go under, and it was a really difficult period here. But before that, there's a lot of people who were, let's say, getting into new money, or affluence was a big thing, and they were starting to buy these cars, and it was a big pivotal moment for Ireland as a country,
and a really
difficult time to start a business.
It was difficult, and look, the first 100%, the first 9 years were pretty tough, tough. But now sitting here in front of you, it was the best experience of my life, 100%. Because do you honestly think, and no one can tell me that, if someone is successful instantly, that they can continue, be successful instantly and then hit a bad patch, they're just going to go down quicker than they came up.
Yeah.
But when you have the scars and the pain and all that kind of stuff, that's when you can survive most things, I think.
I love that. I love that. And I think that those...
It's taken me 11 years to say that, though. That's just the truth.
But I think it's the noticing or the acknowledgement of the fact that I've seen so many businesses or so many companies where they set the goal, and the goal is to get to, you know, to sell the company. Especially, it's a big thing in tech, you know, that you start it and then 3 years or 5 years time, you go and you sell it. Versus for me, it's always been about the journey and being aware of the fact that it's a journey, and because of it being a journey, you need to highlight all of the little wins that go along the road. Mm. Like
hard to do.
It's hard, but it's so important.
Yeah, yeah.
Because those little laughs that you have, or those little things that you remember, they're the things that you remember.
Mm.
You know, they're the little parts or experiential elements in your life that you'll turn back and go, when I set up DC Car Company, or when I set up MiniCorp, I remembered that day, and I remember this day.
Yeah.
But it
means everything, because the money will come and go. We're talking about the booster board and all that. They're just material things, but you can't take away your memories. That's what I'm saying. So when anything good happens, it's the little wins.
Yeah.
It's the little wins. Because usually what happens when you get the big win, it doesn't feel like it, and then you're on to the next thing anyway.
Exactly.
So you never get... There is no finishing line. It's just the way we are. Yeah, that was a mad one, because then we suddenly were in supercars then. That's really what happened.
So how did that feel to go from selling your first motorbike to jumping into that realm?
So I'd say that from the motorbike gate, we sold a good few Audis, BMWs, stuff like that, up until a few years then we were into kind of supercars. It felt like a natural progression because of the people that we were with. You know, we were with Des Cullen. And then in 2009, things went a bit sour then, and Des turned around to us one day and said, "Will you take over our customer base?" Because Des was in his 80s or whatever. And we did. But again, that sounds like we've won the lotto. Things were going down.
Yeah.
Things were bad. There was cars triple financed. Like, ridiculous stuff, you know? So it was a lot of firefighting.
Yeah.
You know, Dublin Fire Brigade were on high alert because there was a lot of firefighting. But again, it was part of the journey. Now, I'm talking about journey now. During it was pain. Like, I didn't have this wisdom back then. I probably could have got through it a bit better if I did, but...
But I think that's the wisdom... Yeah, exactly. It comes with the experience that you're in what I would say is a very, very dark tunnel, and you kind of... You work and you struggle and you keep on pushing and digging and digging and you find the light. You get through
you
the mountain.
You find the light because you know in your heart. Like, you just do in your gut or in your heart, whatever way you say it, that you're better than this, that you know where you're going. And the world doesn't know that yet.
Yeah.
So the same people that... Like, when we set up... To flash back, when I said I was going to set up a company to my greater family friends, I mean, 9 out of 10 of them said, you're mad. So you take that, and then you take when you go to all the 10 dealerships and they don't really look at you. But you know, you just know that one day they're going to be going, oh, yeah, you've done all right, haven't you?
Yeah. Oh, overnight thanks. Success then.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And that's, it's not that it gives me, it does give me a kick actually, because you have to believe in yourself, because most people won't until you produce, you know. That was another pivotal point actually.
Yeah. And I try to spend as much time as I can even saying that to my daughter, who's the eldest daughter at the moment, because Nina's only one and she's still figuring out how to walk.
Yeah.
But Lily, that she's aware that so much of the things that are around her have been created by somebody else, by some person, and somebody who may not have believed that he or she could have made those things, and you know that they can go and create whatever they could possibly dream up.
Yeah, yeah.
Because your own confidence and your own ability to believe in yourself is something that is, it needs to be nurtured.
Like it needs to be nurtured, because we're living in a society where there's always someone better, especially with Instagram or any of the platforms. I mean, perfect people and perfect money and perfect cars. And it's so far from reality.
Yeah.
Like, it's so far from reality. And that's what scares me. Like, even through a darker point in my life that we can talk about again, I went off social media for over a year. I think I told you about that. Because it was like a competition. And I'm not...
Get those followers.
It was just... And it kind of still is, but I look at it from a totally different angle now. But my point is that at about the age of 12, we separate from our childhood feelings and our living in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go into the next stage. And then when we find our spiritual journey or whatever way, and you go deep, you want to get back to that. It's kind of weird. It's like a separation. So if you could be more like Nina, as in... You fall, you cry, you never think about it again. You get a sweet, you don't, you cry. Like, if we were more like that, like how good would our life be? How focused would you be? Because you're not in fear of anything. Not in fear. You're forgetting about everything going on, cycling the bike, you fall off, you get on, fall off, da-da-da-da. And it's just amazing.
There's no dwelling.
No dwelling. And they don't care.
Yeah. Somebody said, I don't know where I heard it recently. It's on maybe a podcast somewhere. But the fact that exactly what you described there, that when Nina wants something, she cries.
Yeah.
But when you give her the thing, she instantly stops crying and just forgets about it completely.
Yeah.
Versus the older that Lily got, the more that, you know, she might get a little bit more upset for 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then it goes into 20 minutes. And then you start to hold grudges. And then it seems to just become this thing that... After a period of time, you know, that you're judging people, or this whole other world comes to light.
It's weird because it's society doing that. You can't do that. You can't do this. Why would you do that? Someone else is doing that. And it's the fear factor.
Yeah.
It's the fear. Like, if you look at any of the top people in business, and who I love is Sarah Berkeley or whatever, the head of Spanx. She's hilarious on Instagram.
Yeah.
She's an incredible person. And great for women, because she's empowering women to work in the workplace and be bosses and all that. But she's an incredible person to follow, just based on no fear, going against what you're used to, not caring what other people think, which is the big thing.
And getting over stuff.
Doesn't really care.
I think that's a really big point, that if you...
You get better as you go on, you get over things quicker.
Yeah.
And that's how the serious guys, you know, the Richard Branson of the world, whoever... They will get over things quickly. They'll make a phone call. They might have lost 10 million, flick it over onto something else.
There's no grudge. There's no dwelling.
No grudge. No, that's just the journey.
So true. I love that. So once you, let's say, had all of this inventory from the Des Cullen thing, how did you find your first customers for that new market?
We just grafted. Like, a couple of platforms in Ireland, like sales places that you can put your car on the web and people see it and come to see it and all that. We just literally did that.
Like, how much of your customers would have come back to you from those relationships that you would build? You know, word of mouth and...
It was a funny time. So around, say, 10, 11, 12... People, because people were so stung in the crash, to get relationships, build relationships, and get loyalty for people to come back to you was very difficult.
Yeah.
Because people just thought someone was trying to get one over them, and then it all became price focused and stuff like that. And still to this day, it's still hard to get loyalty because people are price, price, price. Where I'm trying to go the opposite.
Yeah.
It's like the last thing I want to talk about is price. I know it's important, but it's about what I can do for you. And then price comes second. That's just...
It's strange how those metrics have changed over a period of time, though. Like, I think when we first set up MiniCorp, one of the biggest things that we built the company on was honesty and transparency.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there are so many other agencies out there that would say, you know, it's like the whole thing of a mechanic. You bring your car in and the mechanic says you need a new flux capacitor and you're like, okay, you know, that you just don't understand that market or you don't understand the engineering behind it. And by focusing more on the honesty of it and saying, you know, you're actually building a product with us. Here's what's in your product and here's how it's designed and here's the information or the market research about why it was designed that way. They tend to... I don't know. It's like they've just been invited to the cool party or something. They're getting stuck in and they're getting involved. And maybe they've just been told for such a long time that, you know, you don't understand computer programming, so don't give your opinion on this or something, you know, and that they're holding back.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I just think that this is the whole thing about overnight success that we talked about. It takes a long time.
Yeah.
It's just like I keep saying it's long game, but it's so true because... The only way, it's kind of different with you guys because people really have to put their trust in what you say. And then when you deliver it and move on. For us, and this is what I hate, I don't like being a car dealer because it comes with...
I don't know what I call you a car dealer though.
I'm certainly not a drug dealer. I'm just letting you know. But no, but my point is that, so I'm trying to turn that, and Paul is trying to turn that into like... I don't even know what you say, but it's more relationship based.
Yeah.
Like I don't, and this is what I'm saying is that, but that takes a long period of time of proving yourself over and over and over again. So our market is completely different from like tech in a sense where a lot of people know, like you can go onto the internet and I can sell you a car for X amount. You can then go onto the internet and see 10 different prices and then come back to me. I saw one in blah, 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 where I'm not really interested in that anymore. I'm interested in, I want to come to you because we've dealt with each other for a long time and I know that you'll put me right. And that's really, but it's hard to do. And it takes it. And it's going to take even longer for me to get to my ultimate, but that's just the way it is.
And how does that scale? So how do you, will that person after a certain period of time or having built a really strong relationship with you and great trust that they'll start to recommend you to their friends? And
yeah, they do. At the highest level in Ireland, they don't. It's just, they kind of keep you to themselves kind of thing. It's just the way it is. So for us and our kind of our next stage is global. It's just is. We've been doing that since 2013.
Awesome. So then the next point that I had to discuss is all around social media. So you've been all over that Instagram
Can I talk about one thing before we go on to that?
Go on, yeah.
All right. Because I have to mention this because it's important. So in 2013, my son was born, Connor. Right? So I have a little girl who was 11. Connor was in 2013, I think. I know he was. But at that time, I was going through a dip, right, emotionally. This is why it's important, because it's the journey. And so I was holding him, he was just born. And although, of course, I loved him, of course I did, there was a disconnect. But that was a disconnect within me. So anyway, and that's when I went off social media and all that kind of stuff. So I just wasn't feeling it. I was at a bad point. So I went on to Twitter. I was using Twitter at the time and I was trying to find someone. I need to go and see someone. I just don't feel right. And I eventually found someone called Abby Wynn, who is a shamanic healer, and have been going to her ever since, which completely changed everything for me. Completely. And this is what I'm saying about wisdom.
So what is a shamanic healer?
Well, it's like a shamanic psychotherapy kind of thing. But it's not anything mad like that. She's just she's
wooey.
She's just a person who has dug deep within me to find myself in me kind of thing. And it's energy work and it's all that kind of stuff, which for me is the most important hour of my month, every month. She's written a few books. She's got more books coming out. So she changed for me everything emotionally. This is why when we talk about business and we're talking about hardcore and customers and all that, a massive part now for me is the spiritual side of it, is to not be attached to your business and, you know, find yourself. And you are not your business. You know? So if the business goes tomorrow, it's not you and all that kind of stuff. So we've worked, which has changed everything for me.
Really? Wow, well, that's amazing.
Well, like, if you think about it, right? When you or your friends or someone puts something on Instagram and they send a love heart, when you think about the revolution that's gone on now, they send a heart or that's great and a kiss or whatever, man to man. Like, when you think of the revolution, what's going on right now about this kind of whole outpouring of love between everyone, because we're kind of all realizing that we're all just the same.
Mm.
And I'm seeing this more now through the work with Abby. And it's just amazing. And that has changed, like, for me, has given me a totally different outlook on life. You know, I always go on like you do about your family, which is most important, your health, in the moment. So that blew my mind. It still does to this day. That's just amazing. The reason I'm saying that is that, you know, we can talk about the hardships in business, but that was for me a point that now I'm kind of on a little more of a spiritual journey now than hardcore business. So I don't take it too seriously. I've talked to Paul about it, and he went to see Abby once and he thinks about it. And when you're mindful with your customers, like, customers sense it. If you're a negative person,
I would absolutely sense it.
When you're positive, they tend to be in better form, you know. But that's because I'm totally into myself, the meditation, all that kind of stuff. But it's a pivotal point.
I spend a large amount of time making sure that the team and myself really focus on things like this, on your own self-awareness and growth and almost reflecting on who you are as a person.
Mm.
And I think that more people absolutely need to do this. Mm. That you can get caught in this environment where your head is down, you're working and working and working and working, and then all of a sudden you wake up and you're 60 or 70 or something.
That's what happens.
And it scares the crap out of me, though. And I think that there's also there's this responsibility for me to the people that come and work in my business to say to them, take the time and find the tools that work for you to discover that process.
Mm.
Because the more that you discover about yourself and more around what makes you passionate and what makes you tick as a person and all of the inner workings of yourself, the more that you'll bring out, you know, confidence and contentment and all of these other emotions that will effervesce out of you when you're in a client meeting.
Yeah.
It will go 100% full circle. And when you're in any event or in any meeting or anything to do with business at all, or even just in life, you could be having a chat with somebody who's feeling a little bit down, or you could be having a chat with somebody who is a billionaire. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. The fact that you're so inspiring, so motivating, it just rubs off on them, and they will remember that about you. They'll turn around and go, that's Brian Kenny. You know?
Because you know who you are. Most people don't know who they are. They're just going along, blinkers on. And I see this now that I've discovered who I am.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that I was, and I wouldn't be facetious enough to say I was depressed or anything. I just knew I was out of balance. But you still have to work on it every day. It's like health. You can't just go to the gym once a year and say I'm grand.
Yeah, there you go.
And like, I'm not a fan of the mindfulness for an hour at lunchtime. And I just don't get that. Like, you can't go from a mad office and be mindful for an hour and go back into a mad office. It doesn't really work like that. But, you know, get up early in the morning, do your half an hour and stuff. It just, when you're looking from the inside out, as opposed from the outside in, it just changes everything.
Yeah. What really worked for me is just carving out everything from my life that had no value.
Yeah.
So like when I now look at my desk, I don't have like a big bunch of pens. I only have two pens. Mm-hmm. I have a red one and a blue one, and that's all I need.
Yeah.
And it's strange how much of a significance has played on me, but by cutting out all of the things that I didn't need, I found more time for myself.
I tell you.
And even...
it's the key.
Yeah, getting off the motorbike and going on the train to work every day gave me 40 minutes each way to stare out the window and just, you know, think.
Just be.
Yeah.
Because And that was another thing, what changed things for me a little bit, was when I found out internally that success wasn't about cars, money and houses. When success is about inward happiness, contentment and gratitude for what you have, it just changes everything.
Yeah.
You know, because I had a customer once say to me, he lives in the UK, getting an extension on a house. I said, that's great news. And I reckon it'll be the biggest house in a 5 mile radius. And I was like, oh my God.
How did you do the market research?
Yeah, I was like, yeah, did you go to Lord Mulberry down the road and go, hey, David, I was wondering if, like, I was thinking, how empty is that a conversation? Like, seriously.
Yeah.
Just be happy what you
have. I was there, though. I was totally there. I was infatuated with it, you know?
But that's what people think, because as you say, the 10-year overnight success, people, this was kind of, before you hit me with the social media thing, you look at Instagram, it's the perfect body and the perfect house. Like, life isn't perfect.
Yeah.
So the sooner people like us can get out to the masses and say, life isn't perfect, but it can be bloody good if you look at it the right way, because all the other stuff, it's just not true.
Yeah.
Dust.
Dust. That was awesome, though. I absolutely love that. I can't believe that I was just going to go into social media and we might not have had that banter there.
That's just important. You got to find yourself. You got to be happy. And you got to, like we're talking about, good self-belief. Just keep going.
So, after the shamanic healing?
Yeah, like shamanic, like it's a title, and she does, it's basically, it's energy work. So we're all just balls of energy, really.
Yeah, I'll link her though in the show notes of this, so that people can do a bit more research.
Abby Wynn, yeah, she's great.
But at what point did you kind of then decide it's time for me to jump back into social media or to give this a whirl again?
So I found it was consuming me, right? And I've, like, this is why other stuff I do, and I do say it on Instagram a little bit about positive tricks, like my happy socks I'm wearing today, little tricks to get you in a good mood.
Corporate colours,
yeah. Slightly corporate. But I just felt it was consuming. I was looking at stuff to have zero interest in, really, about people on holidays and drinking champagne by the Eiffel Tower, or, I don't know, being in Ireland or something. So I said, I'm just going to get rid of it. So, like, I took off news apps from my phone. You know the way you get, you know, these prompts saying 3 people killed in a... And you're thinking, I wake up to this every morning. How can you expect to be positive after that? Like,
this is why I don't get people that watch soaps. I don't understand, because Coronation Street and EastEnders and all of these soaps, they're just depressing.
Like, I've had a really bad day at work. Okay, what we do? Let's get a curry, sit down in front of the deli and watch EastEnders. That sounds amazing.
And then I'll
meditate. Yeah. You know. But see, so I just got rid of it because it was just serving me no purpose. And then a year later I came back on, but it was on my terms then. So I was gonna look, I'm not gonna look at all these silly stories all the time and take up my day. I'll do what I wanna do. And then it kind of jumped forward to when I met you and you talk about Instagram videos and all that.
Yeah.
If you're in control of it, it's fine. And if you're using it, if you have a reason for using it, it's fine as a platform for business or personal or whatever. But if it's controlling you, where you're every pop-up and you have to look at it and then you're suddenly, like, it's just not good for your mind. It's just not good.
Yeah.
Who wants to see other people living the dream?
I'll even just show you here really quickly. My homepage on my phone has, like, rows and rows of apps missing. And the main reason for that is that it's more things.
It's more things. Go into your room and put a million boxes in it. Like, are you really going to sleep well? No. So take, you know, all the main sort, leave a few that you actually need. It's cluttering. It's cluttering.
Yeah,
it's emotional
strange responsibility to them as well. Like, when I would get a push notification on my phone from an app, I'd kind of feel that I have to read it.
Yeah, because they sent... It's like, emotionally, they sent it to you, so I have to look at it.
Yeah. And you think that you're buying into the proposition. Like, you're going and making the intent to download this app from the App Store. But realistically, what you're doing is just buying into a contract where they're taking from you the entire time, and you're getting very little out of it. Unless you can control it, as you say.
It's very difficult to control it, but you have to make a decision to control it. It doesn't mean that I'm, like, you know... holy Joe, and I, yeah. you know, it's not that, but that was beautiful. But it's just a case. It takes over people's life.
Yeah,
you know, it does. It just does, because people are obsessed. Like it's a drug, basically.
Like when I think about my daughters growing up in the world,
it scares me.
It scares me, but I'm also trying to, even at this early age, teach them the ability to have creativity and imagination, to have a filter and say, to actually quantify the information that they're getting, and saying, okay, if I'm getting news from source A, B, C, and D, to make an evaluation as to what news is actually relevant or that you care about, because, you know, hearing about news of people getting shot or whatever, I understand why people read it and I understand why people want to react to it, but I think that you need to be able to understand who you are as a person first, and then second of all, to say, okay, the best time for me to read that news or to learn about the world is between, you know, 7 and 8 in the morning, because I can then control the rest of it for the rest of my day. But 100%. How is this emotionally going to affect me, you know?
Because you don't think it is, but it does.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. So you wake up to singing, without sounding, you know, mad, but like singing birds or nice music or whatever it is, or just like, it's a totally different ballgame.
Yeah.
I mean, but like, it's not that it's not terrible that the news has happened. I'm sure there's families that are devastated, but you just don't need to be seeing all this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, because life is tough enough.
But it's the reaction is the thing that I'm really getting at here, is saying that, okay, that's flashed up on my screen, that needs to not happen again. But I do want to learn about the world, and the best time for me to do that would probably be between X and Y time.
You're in control.
You're in control. Like, you're saying that this is my time for news now, and it's not going to affect the rest of my day. I actually don't. I think that that's fine, and there's no problem.
That's healthy. But like, when you have, say, the radio on at work and you're hearing the news every hour.
Yeah.
That's just
Or you're going from, so you sit at your desk at 9 o'clock in the morning, and you're going from an email to a calendar entry to a push notification to a thing, and then all of a sudden it's lunchtime, and everything that you had set out to do that day is now gone.
And but the stuff that you've been looking at is utterly useless.
Yeah.
Utterly useless.
It does nothing to push you forward.
You know, I don't care if Domino's have a deal on 6 pizzas and a Coke. Who cares?
Yeah.
You know.
Okay, back to social media.
Yeah, yeah. This is your fault, by the way. This is your
fault.
It
totally is. Absolutely my fault. How has it worked for you? Like, does it help to get the message of Adrian out there? What I would see myself from it is that it would definitely inspire and motivate other people to get on the game of, if they're passionate about something, to go and chase it.
That is the only reason.
Okay.
Because we sat down in your mate Three of Fee's coffee, and you were doing the videos. Is that what they're called? What are they called? Stories.
Stories.
Stories, of course.
The videos
and all that, and any chartbusters. But so, and you said, I know, yeah, I feel a bit silly walking on the road talking to a phone. And I said, yeah, I can get that. And then you said, you should do it. I said, but who wants to hear me? You could, but you just don't know. It could inspire someone to do it, to do what you're doing. And that hit me. It was like a little seed that fell into my head and then started growing.
Yeah, yeah.
To weeks ahead. And that's why. That's the only reason why. It doesn't get me business. Very rarely.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. Well, it kind of, it's a splinter towards business. But I've FaceTimed someone in Japan. I've had a few people up at the office asking for advice on business, you know. And because I was trying to say to them, look, I'm no guru. Paul is no guru. We don't have like a multi-billion thing. But we are human. We know the story, we know the feelings, the emotions, all that. And so the minute you said it might inspire people, and it actually has, that for me is everything.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing better than someone saying to you that what you said or what you did has helped me do whatever. I don't think there's anything better than that. Certainly can't be mirrored in money.
Is there an energy thing there? That you're giving off the right vibes and that they might be able to collect on that?
100%. But that's because I'm so comfortable with myself.
Yeah.
Like, and this is what I was saying to you before we came on, is that I don't do Instagram stories and then look back and see if I'm standing right and if my hair is done, or see if I was funny or I wasn't funny or if I was motivated. I just do whatever is there. So the one rule I said when you told me that, and I was going to do, and I did it in Dubai first. I said, I'm just going to be myself. and that's it. Like, so much down, this is how unique I like to be. So much so when I put a picture up and I do all the hashtags, like, I individually do the hashtags. You know, people copied them then. Yeah, and I did that for a while, but it didn't feel real to me. So I would spend, I know he's looking at me now like a lunatic, but I would spend up to...
I do this myself.
About 7 minutes just doing hashtags because it's real.
Yeah.
I can't be fake.
But I think... So the way that people look at it now is...
I don't buy followers. I'm not really interested. I'm interested in engagement. And one person saying to me, you help me to do that, or you, when you go, all right, Monday morn, like someone said, I live for that. And I said, well, I'm going to keep doing it now.
Yeah, but it is.
That's really it.
We went down to my cousin's house in Mayo last weekend.
Yeah.
And his kid opens up the door and goes, good morning, good morning, good morning.
It's mad.
And I just find that, he was saying that any time that he watches it, that he's the man that does that thing. And I think that's, I don't know, I love being associated with such positivity. And I think that there's a tipping point for certain people. A lot of people think that, you know, you shouldn't be out there giving advice and information on how to run a business if you haven't gone through it all before and walk the walk. I understand the people that say that, but I don't think that that's what I'm inherently trying to do.
No.
I think it's more just being completely raw, as you were saying yourself. It's like being raw, laying all your cards on the table and saying, I'm Brian Kenny. Minicorp is a business that I'm building right now. And here's all of the crap that I'm going through. And here's all of the reasons that I'm doing it. And it's awesome and it's amazing. And these people have decided to come and work with me. I still can't get over the fact that that's happened.
Yeah.
And... you know, that just all of the ups and downs, so that if you ever were considering starting a business, that you can almost play back what it's been like. And I think that I'm going to use it as well. Like when I'm 5 years older or 10 years older, listening to old podcasts or watching old vlogs or whatever and going, wow.
Yeah, I mean. Did I really wear that t-shirt?
Yeah.
Wow. But like this is why my break from social media and now into it is it's from inside out. Now, this is me. Because, I mean, you ask Ashley, my wife, or my friends, is he putting that on? But they'll say, no, he's not. He's actually worse when he's not. But you know what I mean? So, but
this is when you were at a gig somewhere. I can't remember where it was. And you had your hat on. And, like, the banter out of you was class. But it was the first time that, like, other people were interacting with the stories as well.
Yeah. But you see, look.
It's so raw.
It's like what you say. It's about spreading positivity. It's about, and sometimes, like I'm sure you feel the same when you do a story and you're trying to portray positivity and you don't really feel like it.
Yeah.
But I find that helps me to kick back into positivity more than just sitting there trying to kick, you know.
Like
stuff like my happy socks, they're hilarious. Socks. They keep texting me as well. But it's just, it is who I am. Like it just is. Like, I meet people and they go, all right. And I'll tell you where that came from because it's quite funny.
Go on.
So, you know Andy Quirk, Damon Ivor?
Yeah.
So he has the Ivor, which is all right.
Yeah.
So I was like, that's interesting. Now, so we've come up with that. He's trademarking the all right, but I'm totally trademarking the all right. Just a couple of more T's and L's.
You're going to have to get somebody to do the actual
But that's social media for me in a nutshell. I mean, I do a little bit on... I do it, but I primarily do it for the business. It's to put a personality on the business. My competitors look at me. That's a weird thing. You know, when you see some people following, you're like, God, I can't believe I just said that. But again, it's...
find that absolutely weird. Brilliant.
It's weird, you know, because there's literally no one else... as a company, and Paul does the DC Motor Co and I do me, doing what we do in Ireland or the UK, in the UK a little bit more, but not in Ireland, that would basically get in front of the camera and do all the stuff on the database. Yeah. Just not doing it.
You see, times change and things change. And there was some point in time where, I don't know who was on the board, but the board of directors of Extravision all sat around the table and they said to each other, what about this Netflix thing? And then they all came to the conclusion that they should keep on going the way that they were going. And I think that the adaptability and the ability to look at all of the information that's out there and to react to it and to showcase your rawness, because people don't relate to companies anymore. It's no longer Brian Kenny who works for Bank of Ireland or Brian Kenny who works for Company X. It's just Brian Kenny.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's working for MiniCorp or if he's working for DCE Global or whatever that might be, it's through Brian Kenny that you will get the feeling of trust and brand awareness of MiniCorp rather than the other way around anymore.
Well, I just think everything is brand. It's a personal brand. It's a company brand. It is what it is. You know, it's like when I first started doing the stories was in Dubai. And Dubai was like a reworking of our company because we went in, things were tough here. 2013, we went knocking on doors in Dubai. That's how it worked. And so I started doing it about a year ago in Dubai after our conversation. Yeah, because of the cars. See, I'm kind of lucky like that where I can look cool because I'm beside all these cool cars.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But
do you get a lot of people on social saying, that's an amazing car, or how could I ever drive that, and you're so lucky?
Yeah, completely, and you're living the dream and all that. And I said, no, I certainly feel like I'm living the dream, but it's, you know, it's not. It's the 10-year success, the overnight success. But like, I just get a kick from that. We just have fun. Like, remember what we sell, Ferrari, Bentley, Maserati and stuff. A lot of the guys selling that are kind of, of course they have a personality, but they're not going to do it in front of a camera. That's why it's breaking the mold. That's just the way, like, one day it might be cool.
I'll never forget one of the first times that we sent one of our proposals in MiniCorp to a client, and it literally had broken everything down almost to an hourly basis of what we're going to work on and why. Yeah. And they were shocked. Like, they were like, we've never gotten a proposal that's this detailed, that's this granular, where you're literally showing us everything. And I think that that's such an honest, great way to do business, because they leave with this feeling of, okay, we've all worked together as a team to do this.
Mm.
Because when you really think about it, a success for MiniCorp is not having, you know, huge margins. It's about having successful products that we've
built. It's building a foundation.
Yeah.
But you see, it's very easy for anybody in business to sell out, regardless of what you're selling, to get the big deal, make the big money, and then go away. But it's not really about that. This is why the long game is so important, that like when you're setting up a business and everyone thinks you're mad, you go, well, one day you'll realize it might take 10, 20, 30 years, but one day, and you'll be sitting on the solid foundations and you're going, the reason it's like this today is because it was a journey and I wasn't going to sell out to anybody because I know who I am, and that's the way it was. That's the way it's going to be.
Okay, I think we're going to end there. Unfortunately, I have so many other questions, but yet again, got caught in the banter. I love the banter, though. The banter is what people will love the most, I'm sure. How can people get in contact and say hello?
Well, they can get on. My Instagram handle is, I think it's just Adrian Slattery, is it? I don't even know. Is it? And then DC Global, DC Motor Co. There are two other ones. My email is adrian.slattery@dreamcars.ie.
There we
go. You want to email me?
I'll stick all of those things.
My credit card details are, I know.
4319.
Yeah, no, it's not. What's the CIV? You know the CIV?
What's
the CIV? The CVV number on the back.
You do this on your Instagram stories as well, where you're driving around and you try to...
That's from Phone Jacker. Have you seen Phone Jacker?
Yeah.
Oh, man, it's hilarious.
Okay, I just want to say a big, huge thank you to you for coming on. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on.
And DC Global.
Yeah. All of the success in the world is deserved on you.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks a million. Catch you all in the next one.